This week's parsha tells us the story of the relationship between Yosef and his brothers, the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef, the sale of Yosef by the brothers, and Yosef's first major nisoyan in Egypt with Eishes Potiphera. And I want to talk a little bit about this, but before I actually start saying what I want to say, I want to make a couple of introductory comments which are relevant to what I'm going to be talking about. Maybe that initially you won't catch what the connection is, but Amir Tashem, by the time we've finished, you'll understand what the connection is. I spent last Shabbos in New York, unfortunately. And Friday night was eating by an old Talmud. And there was a large crowd. It was a particular simcha type situation. And there was a large crowd there. 40 people were eating. 40 people were eating the meal there. And amongst the people eating there were some who were Talmidim, past Talmidim of Lev Arya. A couple of guys who were Baruch Hashem successful businessmen. One who's a very successful Magid Shir and a very prominent yeshiva in New York. And a number of Barabatim who are also prominent community activists and philanthropists in various places across the United States of America. And in the course of the conversation that was going on at the table, specifically because the Bala Bais is a close Talmud of ours, obviously the conversation got around to the yeshiva. And there were two guests sitting at the table, and they both said the same thing. They both said, both asked myself and Rabbi Lopian, we know guys who learnt in Lev Arya, and we remember them when they left for Lev Arya, and we know them today. What's the secret? What do you guys do exactly? So that's a question that you get asked on a number of occasions, and we have stock answers for it, none of which actually satisfy me. So I said to the two people who asked the question, I'll give you a very honest answer. And the honest answer is, I haven't got the faintest idea. And I said, it's an interesting phenomena that on very many occasions I've asked a guy, what happened exactly? I remember you when you came in. You know, what exactly happened? And one consistently gets the same answer. Well, the guys who are in my shir know already is my line. You get the Brisker body language, which basically means, Rebbe, I haven't the faintest idea myself. And on Motzi Shabbos, it was actually the wee hours of the morning, I had to go from where I was to another part of New York in order to pick something up from a relative of mine who happens to be a Chassidish younger man. He happens to be a Baba V'Chassid. And I was sitting there and I told him over this question. And I said, I haven't got the faintest idea what the answer is really. To which he said to me the following. He said the late Bavava Rebbe, Shlomo Bavava, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, in the hours when he used to take people in, when people came to him with their problems and with their questions, and for brachas and for eitzes, he used to sit with a chumash in front of him. And very often when somebody would ask him something, he would look into the chumash and then he would give an answer. And somebody once plucked up courage and said to him, Rebbe, what are you doing exactly? And he said, Mekublani me'avosai. I have a tradition from my forebears, from the previous Rebbes, that if you have a problem or you have a question, look in the Parshas HaShavua and you'll probably find the answer. He says, so when people ask me things, I very often look in the Parsha and it springs out, it jumps out at me from the Parsha what the answer is. And as I've said many times, can't deny my roots. Today is Yitzchak Kislev. The Balatanya writes that a person has to live with the Parsha, that the Parsha is alive. The Parsha tells you something. So on the way back on the plane, and it was a long trip because it wasn't direct flight, and I was learning the Parsha, I think I haven't stickle understanding to answer the question. But in order to do this, I have to give a couple of introductions. And the first introduction is the following. Rav Dessler elaborates in Michtav Milio in a number of places, and he says the following. He says, you have to understand that we have no concept whatsoever. We cannot grasp and we cannot understand. It's not within the intellectual capacity of a human being today to understand the gadlus of the Ovis or to understand the gadlus of the Shiftei Kor. It's not within the realm of intellectual understanding of the human being today to understand the gadlus of the Tanoim and the Amoraim. You're talking about madregas which are way beyond what we can understand. However, mitzad sheni, you have to understand that Torah is miloshen hayra'a. Torah is an expression of teaching. And therefore, any story which appears in the Torah about the Ovis or about the Shiftei Kor, anything which is told to us in the Torah is told to us as a Horah, it's told to us as a teaching. And we have to understand it in the way in which we understand things. But we have to bear in mind continuously that when the Torah talks about Chatoim, when the Torah talks about transgressions or sins of the Ovis, it's on a completely different level to what we're talking about. I heard this week from Rabbi Strizar Meirudika Moshel, which he told me over B'Shem, one of his Rabbeim. He told me over the Moshel slightly differently, but I'll put it into my own language. So the nature of children, the nature of small children, anybody who has in their family siblings who are small children knows this, and most of you are young enough to remember this, right? That one of the great Yetzirahs of small children is opening closets, taking things out and playing with them. But children, especially small children, haven't got a concept of what exists in the closet. As far as they're concerned, what exists in the closet is basically a game. As far as the housewife is concerned, it's a can of beans. And if it's in a fridge, it's an egg. As far as the child is concerned, it's the engine of the train. The housewife sees in the closet, in the kitchen, a bottle of oil. The child sees the train carriage. So children are constantly taking out of closets cans, putting them on the floor, open bottles of oil and lying them on their side as the carriage, and then a couple of eggs which they throw on afterwards as being the passengers. So many people have locks on their closets, and many people have locks on their fridge, children's locks, right? Can you envisage the child who's sitting on the kitchen floor and desperately wants to build his train. But he can't get the carriage out of the fridge, and he can't get the engine out of the fridge, and he can't get the people out of the fridge because the fridge is locked. And then he sees his mother walking into the kitchen, opening the lock, opening the fridge door, and taking out the eggs. What does the child think to himself? Ah, chutzpah. She's got the game. She's going to have an engine and carriages and people. And I'm stuck here sitting on the floor looking at the fridge with nothing. It doesn't dawn on the child that maybe the mother is taking the eggs out of the fridge for a different reason completely. That's the way that we have to look. But when the Torah describes events that happen to the Ovis or events that happen to the Shiftei Kol, they're doing things. They're doing something which is completely out of our understanding. But in our small minds, what is it? It's an engine with a carriage, with people. It's chatoim. It's the same sort of averis that we do. And the Torah wants us to understand it in that way because Torah is Miloshon Hara. And we have to bear this in mind before I start. That we're talking about chatoim of the Ovis, we're talking about it in our language. We're talking about it in the way in which we understand it, but it has nothing to do with the reality of what was going on there. Introduction number two. Introduction number two is the following. That which makes the human being unique, over and above anything else which exists in the creation, is the fact that the human being has the ability to think. Surprising though it may sound. The human being has the ability to be able to use his intellect way beyond anything else in the creation. Although there may be other entities in the creation which also have a certain amount of intellect in the animal world, but it doesn't come close to the intellect of the human being. The uniqueness of the human being is that he has the ability to think. Take away the ability of thinking. Take away the thought process from the human being. And what is he? He's an innate object. He's a diamond. He's no different than a stone. He's no different than a brick. And yet we find a fascinating thing. We find that one of the issues that Chazal make the biggest fuss about is the fact that Klal Yisrael did not think. Klal Yisrael was standing at Maimed HaSinai, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says to them, I want to give you a Torah, and Klal Yisrael say, Nasa v'nishma, and the whole world goes mad. Malachim come down and they start giving crowns and this and that, and all sorts of things are going on. Because what does Nasa v'nishma mean? We'll do without thinking. First we'll do, and then we'll worry about the thought. Nasa, first we'll do. What's the big mile in the fact that Klal Yisrael said Nasa? On the contrary, if you're a human being and you were bestowed with the gift of thinking, then before you do something, think. So why are Chazal making such a big fuss about the fact that Klal Yisrael didn't think? So I once saw a Miridik Pshat from Yoshe Ben Soloveitchik of Boston. And he bases himself on a Meir Nevuchim. And he says the following. The Meir Nevuchim writes that a poor person's thought process consists of two levels. There are two levels on which a person thinks. One the Rambam calls a Rotzen Tachten, and the other one the Rambam calls Rotzen Elyon. And he explains, I have not seen the Rambam inside, but he explains that this is Pshat in the Rambam. And when it comes to Rambam, he's a Bar Samcha. You can rely on him. He says the following. He says that how does a person's thought process work? He says the first person's thought process works by weighing up pros and cons. If an individual has to make a decision, what he does is he makes a mental list. In his mind, he makes a list to himself of what are the pros and what are the cons. If the pros are more than the cons, then he does it. If the cons are more than the pros, then he doesn't do it. That's how the human being thinks. It's always weighing up one side against the other side. However, he says it's very interesting. If you take the areas in life which are the most important areas in a person's life, where they're making decisions, and you ask them, why did you make that decision? The answer you'd always get is, no idea. It was instinctive. And he says, I'll give you two examples. One, the most important decision a person makes in his life, marriage. Why on earth did you marry that girl? I haven't the faintest idea, but it felt the right thing at the time. And then you spend 60 years of your life rationalizing and justifying and trying to make it logical why you actually married her. Changing a job. Guy works 20 years in a place, all of a sudden one day he gets up one morning, there's another job offer, and he goes and he changes his job. And you say to him, why did you do that? And he says, tell the truth, I don't know why I did that. I had this gut feeling. That's the expression that people always use. I had the gut feeling it's the right thing to do. To which he says, the Rambam is telling us that there is no such thing. There is no such thing as instinctive reaction. There is no such thing as gut feeling. It's also a thought process of pros and cons. But there are two types of thought processes that go on in a person's mind. There is a thought process which is a slow thought process, and which we realize that we're going through a thought process. That's called Rotzen Tachten. And then there's a thought process which works so fast that we don't even realize that we thought about it at all. It's at such a speed that we never realize, we don't realize that we thought about it, and therefore we give it names. We say it's instinct, we say it's gut feeling, we say it's subconscious. There's all sorts of names we've got for it. Wrong. It is a thought process, it's Ratzon Elyon. The example that he uses is, which you guys are not even familiar with, is the old style phones, the rotary phones, when you had to dial, right? That's a slow thought process. Then they came out with a new thing, right? Tone phone, pulse, right? Boom, 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 boom. Every time you dial, right? You hear boom, 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 right? It works so fast you don't even realize that actually something's being dialed. We make decisions and we don't realize that the decisions that we are making are coming from a thought process, but the thought process is working so fast that we don't realize it. And we cannot excuse ourselves, and this is the bottom line of all this, by saying, well, I didn't really think about it, it was just an instinctive reaction. No such thing. No such thing. It's a thought process. Everything is a decision based on a thought process. I mentioned last year, and I want to say it over again, but I want to take it in a completely different direction this year. I mentioned the vault last year on this week's parsha, but I couldn't remember where I saw it. I just said that I saw once. And this year, I finally discovered where I saw it, and I remembered where I saw it. It's a vault from Rabbi Yelish, the Satmar Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I'll just elaborate a little bit and say it again in my own language. There's a Gemara in Yuma, and the Gemara in Yuma, famous Gemara in Yuma on Daf Lamed Hei Omed Beis. And the Gemara says the following: everybody is going to come in judgment before the Beis Din Shomailo. And everybody is going to be asked the same question. Mipnei ma loy osakto b'teira. Why weren't you totally consumed and occupied in learning Torah? Says the Gemara, the Oni, the person who's struggling to make a parnasa, is going to come to the Beis Din Shomailo, and they're going to say to him, why didn't you spend your time learning Torah? And he's going to say, Oni Ayisi, Rebbeinu Shleim, you know what my financial situation was. The parnasa was torud in my parnasa. When did I have time to learn? My mind couldn't focus. What's the Rebbeinu Shleim going to say to him? That's not an excuse. You were never a bigger Oni than Hillel. And then the Gemara describes the Aniyus of Hillel and the amount of time that Hillel spent learning and the occupation of learning that Hillel had, etc. Then the Ashi is going to turn up. The rich man is going to turn up, Beis Din Shomailo. And they're going to say to him, why didn't you learn Torah? And he's going to say, I had time to learn Torah. I was in the office at 4 in the morning and I left at 2 in the morning. Managed to get 2 hours sleep. That was when I wasn't looking, right, on Bloomberg to see where the stocks were holding. I had time to learn Torah. And they're going to say to him, you weren't richer than Rabbi Eliezer, and the Gemara brings a whole story about Rabbi Eliezer, how rich he was, and he learned Torah. Then the Rasha turns up, and they're going to say to the Rasha, "Neimar lo yasakta b'Torah, why didn't you learn Torah?" And the Rasha is going to say, "Learn Torah? No, you see, I was a good-looking guy. I was a handsome guy. V'tarud b'yitzri, and therefore I had a problem. The females were chasing me the whole time, and I was too busy with them to learn Torah. I had time to learn Torah." When they respond back to him, they say to him, "Klum noya ha'yisa mi Yosef. You weren't better looking than Yosef. Forget it." And what does it say about Yosef, says the Gemara? "B'chol yoyim v'yoyim ha'yisa eishes peitifah mishadlosei bidvorim. Day in, day out, Ashes Potiphar was trying to seduce him." She was talking. She was hacking at him non-stop. And the Gemara carries on, the Gemara says, and she did everything possible to get him to do the Aveira with her. The Gemara says she used to change her clothing 3 times a day. Why? Because maybe he doesn't fancy this dress, so we'll try a different one. Maybe this pantsuit he doesn't like, so we'll try another one. Amrali, she said to me, "Shamali, come and do the Aveira with me. You know, stop playing around and listen to me." Amrali, love, he said, "No." Amrali, she said to him, "If you don't do the Aveira with me, you'll end up in jail. I will get you into jail." He said, "No problem." The Rebbeinu Shlomo is Matir Asurim. She said, "I will break you. You will end up broken and bent." To which he says, "No problem." The Rebbeinu Shlomo is Zekif Kfufim. It makes the people who are bent upright again. She said to him, "You know what? I'm going to blind you." He said, "No problem." Ribbono Shel Olam is Pekeach Ivrim. She said, "Okay. I know a Jew when I see him. $500,000 to do the Aveira." Says the Gemara, he answered her back and he said, "It's not worth my while to be living with you now, because if I live with you now, I'm going to end up living with you with Einam Haba, and that I certainly don't want. Believe me." Says the Gemara, therefore, the Ani won't get away with it because Hillel is Machayavim. The Ashi won't get away with it because the Rabbi Elazar is Machayavim. And the Baal Taiva won't get away with it because Yosef is Machayavim. To which the obvious question arises. The Gemara says in Saita, and it's quoted by Rashi on this week's Parsha, the Ashes Potiphar grabbed hold of Yosef. She grabbed hold of him in order to do the Aveira with him. And Chazal say he was about to give in. And then all of a sudden, Basa diyuknei shel aviv v'niras alei b'chalayim. He saw in a window the image of his father. His father appeared in the window in front of him. And his father said to him, "Asidim ochicha sheyichdevu al avnei eifoid. All your brothers are going to have bichoshes, they're going to be written on the eifoid. And you will be amongst them, you'll do the aveira, you won't be amongst them, because you'll be a roya zaynus. Is that what you want?" And that stopped him from doing the aveira. And Rashi, in fact, is medayakit b'shem chazal from the posuk. The posuk says that he came home and there was no man in the house. There was no man in the house physically, but his father was there. That's how Rashi touches it up. Einish mi'en shabayisham. There was nobody from the household there, but there was a stranger there. Who? Yaakov Avinu. If so, what's the Gemara talking about? If every Baal Taiva in Russia had a father who came to him and stopped him from doing the Aveira, he also wouldn't do the Aveiras. So what does the Gemara say? That Yosef is Mechayev, those people are Baal Taiva. It's not their fault. They haven't got the Musa Yuknam Shalaviv that's appearing in front of them. Number two, what's this window business? What's Pshat that he appeared in the window? Why did he have to appear in the window? If he appeared. Where did the window come into it here? So the Satmar Rebbe says a myriad of all. The Satmar Rebbe says that Chazal say that Yosef was the Musta Yuknei Shel Aviv.
But Yosef looked like his father. Says the Satmar Rebbe, his father wasn't there. He looked in the window, and what did he see in the window? His own reflection. When you look in a window, what do you see? It's like a mirror. You see yourself. In the window, he saw himself. The image that he saw was his image. But in his mind, what did he see? Oi, that's Yaakov. I've got a choice in front of me. I can be part of Yaakov. I can be a continuation of Yaakov. Or I can be a Bal Aveira. That stopped him, says the Satmar Rebbe, from the Aveira. That's why it says Chaloy. And that is why Yosef is Mechayev all the Balei Taiva. Why? I once heard from one of my Rabbeim, the founder of the yeshiva in Gateshead, Blazer Zvinsker, he was Menal Ruchni of the yeshiva. He quoted a medrash on this week's parasha. The medrash says the following: "Vayhi achrei advarim ha'ila." After the events of Yosef arriving in the house of Potiphera, "Vatisa eishes adonov es einecha el Yosef." The wife of Potiphera, "Tisa es einecha el Yosef." She lifted up her eyes. And she saw Yosef. And that's when the taiva started, and that's when she tried to seduce him. Says the Medrash the following: Tzadikim get raised up by using their eyes. As it says, Vayisa Avram es eino vayaris ha-mokim. He lifted up his eyes and he saw the mokim amigdosh, he saw the mokim of the Akedah. However, says the Medrash, Rishoim Neiflim Be'einehem. Their eyes cause them to fall, not to be misraimim. Shenema Vayiso Loit Es Einov Vayar Es Kol Kiker Hayardem. That light lifted up his eyes, Vayaris Kol Yisrael, and he saw the whole of stone. What is the Medrash trying to tell us? What's the point in this Medrash? So bearing in mind Rabbi Strizel's mashal, think a moment about this week's parasha. Think of the story of this week's parasha. It's fascinating, the story of this week's parasha. If you take it as its face value, if you take it Miloshen Hirol, what it's teaching us, if you take it what it's talking about to people like us. Eile told us Yaakov Yosef ben Shvayis Reishono. Yosef was 17 years old. Hayaroye es Echov Batsoim. He was together with his brothers. He was a shepherd together with his brothers. Vehu na'ar es b'nei Bilho ve'es b'nei Zilpa m'shei Oviv. He was together with the sons of Bilho and the sons of Zilpa. Vayove Yosef es dibosom ro el avihem. Vehu na'ar. Rabbi Rublev was struggling tonight in his Musavad. What is the translation of Vehu na'ar? You know what the translation of a hunar is? He was a teenager. He was a 17-year-old. Same as we are. No difference. That's who he was, the hunar. And Rashi says the hunar, he was doing the sort of things that teenagers do. What was he doing? Again, bearing in mind Rabbi Strizel's mashal. He was being misalsal basara. Was trying to work out how much gel will cause that the bush on his head will grow in an upwards left-hand, right-handed circular direction. But he can walk in on Friday night into Kabbalah Shabbos and looked like a Martian. That's what he was trying. That's what he was doing. That's what Chazal say. And he wasn't even hanging around with the best of friends. B'nai HaShvachis, who weren't the B'nai HaImahis. He was your classic teenager. And as I've mentioned before, at length, according to Chazal and the Rishonim, the house of Yaakov wasn't stama house. The house of Yaakov was a Beis HaMedrash. It was a yeshiva. Beis Yaakov was a yeshiva. And there were chashiva people there. There was a chashiva Rosh Hashiva, there was a chashiva Mashgiach, there was Yaakov, there was Yitzchok. And he was there with his brothers. They were learning in this yeshiva. And they're looking at him, and what's he doing all day? Gel on his hair and hanging around with the guys. And add on to that what? The chutzpah. Who's the guy that the Mashgiach likes the most? This guy. He gets special attention. And could they cut that they go and buy him a Ksenis Pasim? We're sitting and hovering away and learning. And we get zilch. He gets all the time in the world. He gets all the attention in the world. And he gets the Ksenis Pasim. That's not the end of it. He's the snitch as well. He's the guy who runs to Yaakov the whole time, telling him there's 14 iPods, 4 computers, 3 Blackberries, 7 Shmipods. But Yovei Yosef is the boss on Royal Aviyim. They don't like him. They don't like him at all. And they say, finish, you know what? We're going to throw him out, the yeshiva. But we're going to throw him out permanently. And he's not stunned. They sit down. They're lamdonim. They're bali halacha. And they work it out. And they run backwards and forwards. And they take out this sefer and they take out that sefer. To Rabbi Rublev, from Rabbi Rublev, back to Rabbi Rublev. They're going to kill him. And he's mutter. And then they decide, you know what? No. We won't kill him. We'll throw him in a pit. And what happens to him, and it's not our problem, it's God's problem. Let God decide. We'll throw him in the pit, and God will decide what will be. Our hands are clean. We're bali bitachon. We believe. And they throw him in the pit. And what happens to him? He ends up in Mitzrayim. Where does he end up in Mitzrayim? Eishes Potifar. That's where he ends up. 17 years old. With the hairstyle. It's one of the guys. Eishes Potifar. Let me tell you a story. Some of you guys have heard the story from me. A number of years ago, I had to travel on a Thursday night from New York to Baltimore to be in Baltimore on Shabbos. And my plan was to leave New York at about 7 in the evening. It takes me about 3 1/4 hours to get from New York to Baltimore. I'll be there by 10:15, 10:30. I get a phone call from a chosheva individual that I highly respect in Lakewood by the name of Reb Chaim Abadi. And he says to me, I need you tonight to speak in the minyan. And I said, yeah. What time? He says to me, 10 o'clock. I said to him, forget it, hi, I'm on my way to Baltimore. And he says to me, Drenchman Cop, you come and you speak, and when you finish, you go to Baltimore. The kids, you can't refuse Reb Chaim Abadi. So I went to Lakewood, and I spoke at 10 o'clock, and by the time this whole thing finished, it was 11:45. And then, you know, by the time you chunk there and this and that and that, I got out of there, it was 12:15, and I start driving to Baltimore. But as I'm going out of Lakewood, I suddenly remember that there's somebody that I got to see still in Lakewood that I completely forgot about. So I give him a call, and he's up, and I made a detour in his house. I stopped there for 5 minutes, and he's not in the center, he's out, one of the outer places. I basically got onto the road, it was about 12:15. And I'm driving for about an hour and a half, and I fell asleep at the wheel. I fell asleep at the wheel for about 3 minutes. But then I woke up, and I realized that I've been sleeping for the last 3 minutes. I was literally sleeping. It was a nest that the road was empty. Because don't ask where I was with the car. I was way over. So I decided this is not a good plan. So I made a quick decision that I'll stop in a motel. And I'll sleep. I'll go to take a shower and go to bed for a few hours. If I leave around about 8 in the morning from the motel, I'll make the last minute in the Aguda in Baltimore, which is 9:30, that I know. I also happen to know that there's a Ramada at this exit where I was, where the prices are very expensive on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because it's a business hotel, basically. But on Thursday, weekends, there's no place is empty, and the prices are slashed. You can pick up a room there for Chatzi Chinom. So I decided, you know what? I'll drive into the hotel, I'll stay for a few hours, I'll go to sleep for a few hours, and then I'll carry on driving. It starts pouring with rain. It's coming down like the bubble started. Right? This is it. America is finished, the bubble has started, it's coming down in sheets, it's coming down. And I'm struggling to keep myself awake at the wheel, and I pull into the parking lot in front of the hotel, and it's totally deserted. Which it always is on a Thursday, because there's nobody there on Thursday. In the middle of the week, you've got all sorts of people there. I want to get out the car, and I said, I get out the car now, and just to get from the car to the entrance of the hotel, I'm going to get soaked to the skin. So I'll wait in the car a couple of minutes, and when the weather breaks a bit and there's a gap in the raining, I'll run into the hotel. So I'm sitting in the car, this is like 2:30 in the morning, I'm sitting in the car and I'm pontificating. I am philosophizing to myself. And I'm saying to myself the following: you are in the middle of nowhere, right? There aren't many, many Jews in Mount Holly or wherever it was called. There aren't. In fact, there's nobody here. You are sitting outside a hotel at 2:45 in the morning in the middle of nowhere where nobody knows who you are. There are no Jews here. You could basically do cold over Osser and nobody would know anything about it. So what's holding you back? Well, the answer is, if it wouldn't be for the fact that a Jew is Shema Teru Mitzvahs, has an inbuilt Yerushalayim and a Chanama. There's nothing to hold him back. So Baruch Hashem that there's such a thing called Yerushalayim, because otherwise who knows what would happen. At which point the weather breaks and I get out the car and I walk through the doors, the revolving door of this hotel, and I come to the front desk, the reception, and there's a sign: if there is nobody here, ring the bell. There was nobody there. So I ring the bell. And out walks a young guy and a Kipastru guy, and he says, Rabbi Rappaport, what are you doing here? And I turned around, he thought I'd gone mad. And I raised my eyes to heaven, and I said, Ribbono shel Olam. It was a philosophical, pontifical thought that was going through my mind. It had nothing to do with reality. Get it straight. I didn't mean anything. I was just thinking Musa. That's all. And the guy says to me, Rabbi, are you okay? I said, not really, no. This was a guy that I and Rabbi Lopin had interviewed a year earlier, because he wanted to come to Yeshiva and we hadn't accepted him. And he got a holiday, a vacation job working in this hotel. And I always think of this story when I get to Parshas Yosef. You've got a 17-year-old kid in Potiphar's house. There's nobody there except for his wife, who's offering him everything, you name it. Do an Aveira with me. Nobody knows anything about him. Nobody will know that he did the Aveira. Nobody will ever find out about it. There are no Jews here. He's the only Jew in all of Egypt. And there are no Jews are going to get here. And even if they do get here, they'll never know about the story. What should have been the reaction of a 17-year-old kid in the way in which the Torah describes him? V'hunar. He's Mesalsel B'Sayroi. He's maybe Dibosom Ro'el Aviyem. Es B'nai Bilov, Es B'nai Zilpo. What should be his reaction? Let's go. And then he sees in the window his own reflection. And what goes through his mind? Whether it goes through his mind consciously, aus Rutzen Tachten, or whether it goes through his mind subconsciously, or instinctively, or gut feeling, call whatever you want, aus Rutzen Alien, what goes through his mind? What I'm going to do now, the decision that I'm going to make now, is a decision which is not a decision for this minute. It's going to affect the entire future. Am I going to be a continuity of Yaakov Avinu? Or am I going to take a left turn and become another Yishmon and become another Esav and get lost from this line? That's the decision that I'm making now. It's not a decision of a good-looking girl, right, who's offering me $500,000 to tzuv, bakshish. That's not the decision I have to make now. The decision I have to make now is, what's going to happen? And that's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says, everybody sees. We all see, we've got eyes and we see. And therefore anybody looking in a window sees their reflection. The question is, what do you see? The answer is, you see what you want to see. A tzaddik? What does he see? He's constantly seeing things that can be meraimim him, says the Medrash. That can bring him higher. That's what he always sees. So when he looks, he doesn't just see a mountain. He sees a Mokum Kaddish. When he sees three people walking towards him, he doesn't just see three Arabs. He sees three Kalim to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Chnasas Achim. And light also sees. What does light see? Light sees, wow, this is a place where a guy who's got a good business mind can make money. Eitz daim! Who cares? But at this point in time, I can make money. I'll go to Sodom to make money, and that's the end of you and your kids and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. They're finished. He doesn't see that. He sees now. He sees the minute. Eizu Chochem. Says the Tanai Maseches Tomid. Haroya es hanoilad. He sees now the noilad. He's not prophesizing what will be. In front of him, the sight that he sees is not the physical thing that appears in front of him, but the ramification, the noilad. That's what he sees. Rabbi Akiva is standing with his chaverim, and they hear the tumult and the rejoicing and the good life of Rome. And his chaverim start crying. What a bitter goddess it is. And Rabbi Akiva laughs. And they turn around to Rabbi Akiva and they say, Gemara Makkos. And they turn around to Rabbi Akiva and they say to Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? And he says, why am I laughing? If this is what's happening to Esav, he's having such a good life. Can you imagine what a good life Klal Yisrael are going to have? They don't see that. They see Rome. He sees Klal Yisrael. I out of the ruins of the Beis HaMikdash comes a fox. And they start crying. And he starts laughing. And they say to him, why are you crying? And they say, because we're seeing the Nevuah of Uriah being fulfilled. The Churban HaBayis. But why are you laughing? He says, because I see the Nevuah of Zechariah. I see it rebuilt. I see it there in front of me. They didn't know the Nevuah of Zechariah. They knew the Nevuah of Zechariah. But they didn't see the Nevuah of Zechariah. He saw the Nevuah of Zechariah. Yosef saw in that window what other people didn't see. By choice! Because it's up to us what we see. Whether what we're interested in is Chai Yeshua, whether we're so small-minded, whether our brains are so miniature that all that we can see is the immediacy of the situation, or whether we can have a vision which is Ezu Chacham Hareis HaNeilat. Every single guy who walks through the doors of this Beis HaMidrash has a Koach HaRiya. Every single guy who walks through the doors of this Beis HaMidrash has the power to see. The question is, what do you want to see? You can walk around, and Yosef could have done the same thing. Yosef could have looked into that window and said, what do I see? I see a 17-year-old kid. You know where I'm coming from, Rebbe? You know what I've been through in my life? Greece of Tsaros I've been through in my life. I had Rebbe in fourth grade who beat me up, and therefore I'm now potter mikol ha'tira kula for the rest of my life till I'm 120. Right? My mother stopped nursing me too early, therefore I have a trauma, therefore I'm allowed to do kol davar asa for the rest of my life. What do you want from me? I'm doing my bit, I'm trying, I come to the Beis HaMidrash for 10 minutes a day. You've got to know where I'm coming from, you've got to understand where I'm going to, you've got to understand who I am, where I am, what I am. It's not mine, it's not my iPod, it's not my computer, it belongs to my mother-in-law's sister, you're not married, that's a technical point, it's nothing to do with the reality, don't confuse the issue with the facts, right? The amount of incest that goes on in this yeshiva is unbelievable. Everybody's got a cousin and a sister and they're doing with them, don't ask what, but they're a cousin and they're a sister. Huh? He could have seen all that in the window when he looked into the window. He could have seen what he wanted to see, a 17-year-old kid who has an answer to everything, who has a justification for everything. I'm depressed, I'm this, I'm that. Or you could look into the window and you can say, 1 minute, what I do now it mirrors itself. It's going to mirror itself in my kids, and it's going to mirror itself in my grandchildren, it's going to mirror itself in my great-grandchildren. And that's what I see when I look in the window. And that's the answer to the question. The guy who changes around, he doesn't even realize it himself. And you ask him what happened, he shrugs his shoulders and he says, I've got no idea. Of course he's got no idea, because it's Ratzon Elyon. It's a thought process which works so fast, you don't even help yourself that you're thinking that. But what is it? It's the ability to look and to see the Noilad. And the guy who walks in, goes out, nothing changes, and everything, right? He's the guy who's Chai Yeshua. He's living for the hour. What he sees is his little miniature world with his justifications and his things, and it's not for me, and I can't, and it's too much, and it's too big, and all the other Irish guy borscht that keeps him, gets spewed out constantly. The limit of the parsha is that we have a choice open in front of us, each and every one of us and everything, and the choice is, how do we want to see? We want to see things the way they really are. Or we want to see virtuality. We want to see this imaginary world that we're living in. It doesn't work. If we can't get our act together and be chachomim horayis hanaylad, then you can spend 20 years in the yeshiva and nothing's going to happen. But if you can be a Roya Sanoilud, then within a second, your perspective changes, your life changes, and all the future dairies change.